Hello guys, thank you for joining us for yet another episode. I think we're on episode four. Yeah, and is it too late to say Happy New Year or Happy 2020? Today's topic is about log kya kahenge, and this is a phrase in Hindi which means what are people going to say. So Asha, do you want to explain a little bit about this very infamous phrase that you've been using as a community?
See, the version I'm used to hearing is manso sugese, as in like in Gujarati, it's what will people say? Again, the same thing.
Yeah.
And I think it just stems from the idea that our actions are kind of bound to the judgment of people around us, or, you know, the idea of like not wanting to rock the boat or conforming in fear of, you know, tarnishing our own reputation and the reputation of people around us. So it's often like older generations, like grandmas or mums, will say to their daughters or granddaughters, like, you know, manso sugese, if you go and do this, or, you know, if you speak a certain way, or if you dress a certain way, or you do, you know, you're in a certain industry, or you live in a certain area, or, you know, even like friends that you have. So yeah, I think it all links back to the idea of wanting to kind of conform and not tarnish your reputation, really.
So my experience with log kya kahenge has been around not annoying people around me and you know, not living my life in a way that could offend them. And
oh, really?
It might be people that aren't even in your family or like anywhere like close to you.
Yeah.
But it's just people in the society or in your community. And it comes from the fear of being judged and being, being treated like a laughing stock, or being the subject of everyone's, you know, whispers and the main topic of gossip in the community.
Yeah.
So it's more about like staying low key and make sure you're not too loud.
Yes.
Make sure you're not too much out there, because you're giving people a reason to talk about you. So I think that's where that comes from.
And like, I guess being obedient as well, like meeting all the expectations that are put on you by society, isn't it?
Yes.
That's really interesting. So what are your own experiences of direct, are there any direct examples that you have?
So definitely I can think of like not being allowed to be seen in public with too many guys, for example.
That
was definitely one as a teenager, because it was like, oh, you know, if someone sees you in the main streets growing up, so in Barcelona there's very few areas where there's a lot of aunties and uncles walking around, and so I was always told like, stay low key if you're with your guy friends, like just stay kind of a meter away from them to make you know that.
How old would you have been?
16 probably.
Okay.
It's probably changed now, and I think the things that worry us now at the age of like mid-20s to late-20s probably is very different now, and
yeah.
We don't necessarily mind if we're seen with the opposite gender as much, but it's more like make sure that you're working in make sure you have a decent job, and make sure you're getting married at the right age and all these things.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, it's really funny that you say that in the context of work, because I found, you know, like growing up, I wasn't so much of like, oh, what are people going to say if you hang around with boys, or, you know, you were at a community event and you're wearing your sari a little bit low or anything like that.
Showing your belly button a bit too much
belly and back. But I found it more as I was kind of coming into my adult years in terms of work. So when I went freelance, it was, I guess, being a freelance writer and a model doesn't really conform to your typical, or, you know, your expectations of a South Asian female. Like, so it's not your typical path, and especially not going freelance. And so I think there was a little bit of like, oh, what will people say, you know? I think also because it's like owning and running your own business, and typically the only people who are seen as successful business owners are your, like, you know, your uncles, you know, your middle-aged brown men who are, you know, who definitely have the characteristics of a strong business owner.
Mm-hmm.
So then when a young female comes along who's like, oh yeah, I run my own business, people are kind of like, really? How is she going to be successful? So it's a little bit of like, oh, will people take you seriously? Like, you know, what will people say? That kind of thing. So in one sense of running my own business, but then also being creative as well, because typically the assumption is that unless you meet, you know, unless you're in a kind of accountant, doctor, dentist, yeah. that kind of thing, will you make enough money?
Yeah.
And oh, you know, what will people say if...
What about the physical aspect of it? So obviously you're a model and in the South Asian community, there is still a certain level of like, maybe we don't talk about these yeah. things or this is not a real job kind of misconception. So what do you think the kind of the thoughts, other thoughts around that in our society?
You know, I thought that it would be a lot more traditional and thoughts and reactions would have been a lot more traditional. And maybe because the modeling work that I kind of started off doing was quite Asian bridal. So it did conform to the expectation of what a woman should be looking like and acting like.
Like so, that typical shy.
Exactly. So I was just kind of, it was almost like, oh, she's just doing what she's going to be doing in a few years' time when she's getting married kind of thing. And then I think that's how people kind of accepted that, oh yeah, she's a model, that's what she does. And I mean, now I do more kind of commercial beauty stuff. So it's you know, people are like, oh, she models, not a big deal kind of thing. But I do think that if I had kind of gone into straight, like, you know, fashion, high fashion modeling, there might have been a different response to it.
That's interesting. Because you've also done modeling for swimwear brands as well.
I didn't even think about that, actually.
Yeah, because that, I mean, I've been told, you know, you can't put up photos of you revealing too much skin because people are watching and you don't know what they're going to say and you don't want to give people a reason to talk about you negatively.
That's so,
how have you overcome that kind of... that whole mentality and just kind of owned it anyway? Because... I mean, people are applauding you for doing something like that.
Stop it.
I do.
I don't know. I didn't even think of that as a thing, actually. I think it was just because I know that I'd like to hope that we all love our bodies and we're all 100% certain with them. But actually, I was reading The Guilty Feminist and she said 97% of us don't like our bodies. So like 3% of us like our bodies. That's like nothing. So I think by putting up those photos and by shooting for a swimwear brand who had like amazing ethics and like this sustainable, I think it was like everything we stood for and everything I stood for. And I was like, well, if I bear my bikini body, then hopefully the people who do see it can be like, oh, actually that's a normal body. Like it doesn't all have to be kind of abs and butt.
Yeah. No, I hear what you're saying. And I think it's so important that we recognize that it's something progressive rather than something to be ashamed of.
I think social media has like really helped with that actually, because it's like introduced this new wave of feminism or like women who are like, we're going to use the internet to our advantage and really like empower each other and really take action and change the game. But having said that, with the dance stuff, with your dance stuff, do you feel like you've had a similar thing of like, oh, what will people say?
Definitely. I mean, my mom, like every day on the phone is like, oh, like you know, revealing a bit too much of your stomach in this video, aren't you? And like, she'll literally message me after some videos and be like, oh, I'm glad you're wearing clothes in this one.
Oh my God.
But she's obviously joking.
She's obviously
joking, but she's like, you know, there's like a slight hint of truth. But no, it's kind of turned into a joke, but it's like, I see myself as someone who's, we were talking about this before starting to record, and we were saying that I don't actually consider myself as like, you know, one of those stereotypical, like super skinny with abs kind of dancers yet. I still, don't mind bearing my stomach, because even though I've also had moments where, I felt like, oh my gosh, you know, it's jiggling a bit too much, I still feel like it's important to be that person who is just owning herself, because that passes on a message that you can just be okay with your body. And there are so many dancers out there who are not, you know, super skinny, you don't fit in that that stereotype. And I think that's incredible, because I feel inspired looking at them.
100%. I think that totally also helps to combat the whole what will people say thing.
Yes.
And you're not buying into it, and you're not, well, both of us have kind of, in our own ways, not even realizing that we've done it, have kind of defied that. And a lot of other people, you see it all the time, again, on social media, we're meeting people who are doing the exact same thing. And they're setting an example.
And we talk from the perspective of South Asian females, but there is so much stigma around males as well, and how like they have to be looking a certain way and they have to have six pack abs because that's what they see on TV. And like, just look at Bollywood, like everyone's, all the males are chiseled in Bollywood, and that's what's the thing to aspire to. Which is so problematic. So I think that, it's not just a female thing. I'd say like everyone does face that. And like, what are people going to say if I, you know, take my top off as a guy and, I don't have abs?
Yeah.
Like, is that something to be ashamed of?
Yeah.
And what does that say about me? Does it mean that I'm lazy because I don't go to the gym like other guys do, right?
God, so. It's just such a complex web, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's just the aesthetic side of it. When you take the whole, what will people say, and put it into, I don't want to say relationships.
We talk about it every time.
We talk about it all the time. Or, you know, again, like the work context, or even, I don't know, deciding that you want to move abroad or you want to change career or, it could be anything. I think that underlying framework of that fear of, oh, what will people say, has just stuck.
It's like we live our lives constantly based on, you know, our fears of other people's opinions of us. And we frame everything we do around that. And, you know, like you hear these, you read these articles about, people who are in their late 80s, they're on their deathbed. And the only thing they can think of is their regrets. And those regrets for us, a lot of them will stem from our fears of what other people would think of us. We don't do things because we're scared that other people are going to laugh at us or gossip about us. And when you're at that age, you know, thinking back to your entire life, would you want to be grateful that you didn't care and you just did it anyway? Or would you be guilty? Would you prefer being guilty that, oh, but you know, I conform to societal standards? So that is definitely one to think about. But I wanted to ask you, where do you think our fear actually comes from? Like, why do we care so much as a society, what people will think about us?
I think there's like two levels to it. I think there's like the individual level and then like the universal or like the societal level. And then when you add a South Asian lens, it's like a whole different thing. I think on the individual level, it comes from us wanting to be liked and to be validated. And we want to do what's accepted or perceived as being right within our community, not necessarily a South Asian community, but it might be, I don't know, at work, or it might be, you know, any sort of social community.
Like, it just doesn't just apply to South Asian communities, but I'm sure it also applies to other ethnic communities or just any community where people are tight knit and they sort of all know each other.
100%. Because it's almost like, as like, this is like the psychology side, like kicking in. I think because life feels so much easier and better when you're liked and people agree with you and they respect your opinion and things like that. So I think worrying is a defense mechanism, or like worrying what people are going to say is a defense mechanism for going against that. Because, you know, by constantly, you know, if we're checking in with ourselves, like, oh, I want to do this, but what will people say? Will they be okay with it? Will they not? On an individual level, I think that's what it is. So I think like on a wider scale, it's a similar thing. Like it's a way of surviving and living cohesively with others. Now you throw on the South Asian lens onto that. I think tradition and culture have a massive holding. You know, a lot of these traditions and expectations, their origins have been warped by the good old patriarchy to remove independence and to kind of control to a level. And it's almost like anything or anyone that deviates from those traditions or expectations is kind of seen as a threat, and they're automatically shamed or stigmatized and kind of punished, even if it's not so like overtly or obviously punished. And so it's almost a form of like rejecting you from society. And also like bearing in mind, we all kind of want to be accepted and we need it to like survive and thrive. So it's almost like what we said, a fear is formed, and deviating from expectation will lead you to also being rejected. So it's like fear and negative reinforcement is now driving our behavior. Mm-hmm. So I think the idea of what people will say is a translation to literally say, like, will my actions result in shame and exclusion from society on whatever level? And also, like, society evolves and those traditions and expectations evolve. So whilst, you know, those outdated traditions of what might have happened 100 years ago in India don't count now when we're second generation in the UK or in Europe, but we're still using that framework to our context and our time, like we said about work or, you know, dance and modeling, whatever yeah. it is. But I feel like now we're questioning it. Yes. And we're questioning everything. We're questioning the framework. We're questioning all these underlying expectations and traditions. And so I think that there's a shift.
Yeah, there definitely is a shift that we have used what our parents have believed and like the older generations that we've interacted with. So whether it's our parents or our grandparents' generations and everything we've learned from them as kids has stuck with us. But yeah. now, like you're saying, we're actually questioning that now and saying, well, is that how I want to live my life as an adult when I have my own kids and when I have grandkids? 100%. What messages do I want to pass on to them?
And it's almost like, does that serve us? Like maybe it served them, but...
because it was relevant to them.
Exactly. Or maybe they were bound to those expectations, yeah. but does it necessarily serve us?
Yeah. So take the example of a female has to know how to make round roti, right?
It's the typical one.
It's the first thing I learned to make. Did you? My mum was like, I don't care if you know how to make sabji, which is like the curry, but you need to know how to make round rotis because that's the hardest thing and it's the first thing I'm going to teach you. Now, the irony is that the only thing I know how to make is round rotis. I don't know anything else. It's because I focused that on that.
That's so funny.
And it's because of this societal thing of like, oh, no one's going to marry you if... you don't know how to, if you make like, you know, round
continent shape.
Yes.
But like, that's so funny because that's like a literal, that's a literal.
That's like a mistranslation. 100%. Right?
And that's a literal example yeah. of, you know, like now we mock this whole like, Marshall Suk essay or like, what will people say?
Yeah.
Because we're just like, if to us it feels so outdated. But that whole round roti thing is literally one of those typical stereotypical things that
it no longer affects us
exactly.
because we are not subjected to arranged marriages. Our value is not based on the shape of our rotis. It's based on who we are as people, our identities and our careers and who we are as like our beliefs,
yes.
right? And so maybe that is something that we are questioning now a lot more, and it's so important to do that. And I think even the older generation, they recognize this.
Yeah.
Like you would speak to aunties nowadays. I'd speak to my mom and she knows this no longer is like the biggest thing that I need to be focusing on,
yeah.
you know, is knowing how to make a full meal because I mean, we have HelloFresh these days, so you're okay.
What is HelloFresh? Am I really out of like touch?
So it's basically a service that they send you ingredients exactly in the proportions that you need them to cook a full
oh,
meal
nice.
And they give you the instructions.
Oh, that's
so
amazing.
You do not need cooking
I haven't
anymore.
Heard of that brand, but I've heard of the concept. Yeah, exactly. Everything is like on tap, literally. So what about you? Where do you think that these things stem from?
I think it's our inherent need as a species to be validated
mm.
all the time. And I mean, you can see from like our digital selves nowadays, everything we do is curated to please the eyes of the people who are looking at it.
Mm.
And it's because we want people to tell us that we are good enough all the time. And I think it comes from just, I think as a species, we're actually very insecure. I mean, I can talk about myself on a personal level, but I know that everybody is insecure because everyone's always like, oh, am I good enough? How do I appear to other people?
Yeah.
It's because we can't see how we appear.
Mm.
I can't kind of come out of my own body and like visualize how I'm making other people feel
yes.
when I speak a certain way or when I act a certain way or what my facial expressions are making them feel.
Yeah.
So on like a wider scale, it just translates into us constantly wanting to make sure that we're not upsetting other people, that we are living our lives based on what other people value.
Yeah.
And the truth is, we'll never know what they value.
No.
So we're constantly conflicted and confused.
Yeah. Why do you think that our generation, being South Asian, care so much about what other people think?
That's a really interesting question. And to be honest, I don't know the answer to it. I think that it's what we've learnt as kids. We've learnt that we have to smile and nod.
Yeah.
We have to be respectful towards our elders, which is all great. But that also means that we need to make sure that we're not stepping out of line.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, we need to make sure we're not too much, we're not too loud, we're not too eccentric. And I think speaking for both of us as females, especially females, I think, are always told to kind of sit pretty, you know, cross your legs when you sit. Don't sit like a man. Don't spread your legs out like too much. What are people going to think? You know, make sure that when you go to any relative's house, you ask to help in the kitchen, things like that. And it's just like, if you don't do that, then the aunties are going to judge you because they're going to think, oh, what did her mom teach her?
Yeah. It's all rooted in obedience, isn't it?
Yeah.
And
submissiveness.
Yes. And I think that, like, going back to what we spoke about before, I think that worked for previous generations. And I think also maybe some of it comes from the idea that South Asian cultures are quite, like, collectivist. Like, they're very family orientated.
Extremely, so yeah.
You weren't just, you know, your actions didn't just have a consequence on you, but they had an impact on your entire family or your entire circle, your entire community.
Yeah.
But then, like, moving here or moving to a more Western society, which is more individualistic, it's a little bit like, I guess, our grandparents and parents were figuring out what that kind of balance was. And for us being born in Western societies, we're kind of battling between, or we're not battling, but we're figuring out what serves us in an individualistic society. We're still trying to maintain that collectivist, family orientated life, but also pick and choose as to what, again, serves us.
Yeah.
And I think this whole what will people say no longer serves us, because in an individualistic society, people don't really care because they're too busy worrying about themselves.
Absolutely. And that's so interesting, actually, that you mentioned that, because this whole individualistic Western ideal versus collectivist Asian, like Eastern ideal, is I read about this in a book, and it talks about how families in places like China and India value family honor more than an individual and their life.
Oh, wow.
So in a very extreme case, they'd much rather that their relative, like, I don't know, you know, just didn't, like, come out of the house if they were putting shame to the family, because it's the honor of the family that matters more than anything as a collective kind of
institution.
Versus in the West, where everyone just looks out for themselves, and you know, kids at the age of 18, you know, they get cut off because traditionally or stereotypically.
Stereotypically.
So whereas I think I mean in like Indian culture, for example, with our kind of ancestors, and especially the females, they were kind of almost passed on from the parents onto the husband and the husband's family. So it was always about making sure that you have someone looking after you, which I think has pros and cons to it. And the massive pro is that, like, there is always someone who cares about you. So if you fall ill, you know, there's always going to be someone looking after you. I think we're going on a tangent here.
Sorry.
But the point I'm trying to make is that all of this explains why in our culture we care so much about the people around us, because not only do we care what they think, we actually just care about them as people, and we want them in our lives and we want them to like us and be around us.
And again, it still serves us. Like you said, like, we want, you know, that having a strong family and friend unit is always going to help you survive, and it's going to help you thrive, kind of thing. So do you feel like the new generation, whilst we do want to kind of expel all these traditions and these ways of thinking, we've still internalized them, and we're still behaving through that, oh my God, what will people say lens?
1000%. Like, I know that I care so much about what other people think. And it is very deep rooted. It comes from my childhood and what I've been taught. And I've always been taught to be good to people, so that they'll be good to you back. So, it kind of instigates this, like, doormat mentality where you're just like, I will do almost anything to please, like, the people around me, or to make sure that they're comfortable and they're happy, which can end up backfiring on you.
Yeah.
And so, yes, we're very conflicted, because now you find that we're suffering from, like, lots of mental health issues, because we're constantly looking for validation in other people, and we're constantly anxious about accidentally offending someone, or saying something that's going to come across the wrong way, and you'll kind of conjure up, like, 1,000 different scenarios in your head after, like, a social gathering, thinking, oh my gosh, how did this come across? What did I say by accident? I don't even remember.
Did, like, I overshare?
Did I? Yeah. And then you'll almost, like, type up a message to your friend being like, you know, what did I say yesterday? Did I embarrass myself? And then you contemplate whether you're going to send it. Yeah. And I've been through all of that. So yeah, I think it comes from like what we've been taught and what we've internalized as younger, like as kids, essentially, which puts us in an awkward position. But it also means that we're more conscious of it and we're actively questioning what we've been taught. Yeah. And we are kind of trying to transform that into something that's more relevant to us as a society today. I'm conscious I've just like word vomited. So what are your thoughts on what do you think the fear of Logia Kahenge means for us as a generation of South Asian millennials?
I don't think we've really taken time to question it and to understand where it's coming from or to untangle all the implications that come with it. It's like what I mentioned earlier about, you know, it must have served society in a different age or a different context. But now I think we're feeling this kind of cognitive dissonance and this internal kind of
conflict
because we don't really know, we're abiding by these things, but we don't know why. And I think it's just time for us to kind of, and I think, no, I think we already are starting to untangle it and we're already starting to dismantle the kind of the fear and the worry behind it.
But do you think we're living now without worrying about what people are going to think of us?
No, actually, that's a very good point. Well, no, I think that the framework has just changed. It's not, the things that we traditionally worried about are no longer relevant, but now we have a whole bunch of new issues. I don't know, something like with social media, body image, self-love, success.
Yes, like the whole misconception of what success is and trying to appear successful so that other people can be like, oh, well done, you know?
But also having said that, I think we are working towards it. And I think we're so much more well-informed and well-read to understand that not everything that you see is, don't take everything for face value. And but I think now generally everyone's starting to become a lot more conscious and aware. And we are progressing. Like, you know, that framework is slowly kind of being dismantled and overthrown. Okay, so last question. What do you do to overcome this whole what will people say, worry or fear, if anything?
I just cry. I'm kidding.
You're allowed to cry. Like, I know. That's a really good technique.
Yeah, you're allowed to vent out through tears. I try and confront people a bit more now. I've never been a confrontational person, but if something is really irking me, and I recognize it early enough, then I try and bring it up in a nice, non-conflicting sort of way, so as to kind of shut it down before it starts to really bottle up inside me. And I think another part of me just kind of talks to friends that I trust and I know won't judge me. And I just straight up tell them that something's bothering me or I think, you know, I think I've come across slightly not how I wanted to. And they'll give me advice or I'll just, I don't know, I'll just talk myself out of it. Mm. Like there are different ways of doing it, I guess. Yeah. Or you kind of just let it fizzle out.
Yeah.
So there's no really one thing that I do or a practice that I have. I think I'm still working that out because as a chronic people pleaser, I think I've spent a lot of time worrying. I've spent a lot of time worrying about how I'm perceived. And I think, you know, for both of us being quite like out there online, it can be quite crippling.
Yeah.
When we try and think about how it's coming across. And so sometimes the best thing is just not to think about it.
Yeah, definitely.
So what about you? What do you do to overcome this fear of Logia Kahenge?
I don't really know. I think maybe I ask people who I'm close to and who I feel safe around, you know, often like similar situations where you feel like you might have been a bit too much in whatever way in a sort of setting, but asking someone who is also in that scenario. So, you know, if I've gone to a community event or a wedding or whatever, I'm feeling like I might have been a little out of place or whatever. I might come back and be like, Mum, was that okay?
Or your sorry was too long.
Yeah. I was like, oh, was that okay?
I mean, my sorry will always be too low. So
yes, that is the right answer.
A chronic. I think that's just like an ongoing thing. That, and now it's not even so.
Gotta own it, girl.
Yeah, but I think just asking someone who's close to you, and also realizing that if what you're doing is not hurting anyone, and if it is trying to help other people, then you've got nothing to worry about. The truth and goodness will always prevail.
Yes, and we are also only human. So you can't always say the perfect thing at the perfect time. So yes, on that note, thanks so much for listening, guys. We shall see you very soon at the next one. Very soon.
Very soon, yeah. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.